Welcome to Weird Games and Weirder People, a podcast about role-playing games and the weird, wonderful people behind them.
Hello, wonderful weirdos, this is Diogo Nogueira and I'm back for Game On Expo for GaryCon. It was an amazing trip, I'll tell you more about it. But today, I have a very special guest. I'm talking about Anthony Meloro. He's the creator of Mystic Punks. He has a very do-it-yourself culture. But before I get into that, I would like to remind you to please subscribe to the show wherever you listen to the podcast. Leave us a review, tell us what you think about the show. And please also share it with your friends, with your game group, with your family, with your pets, I don't know, with everyone. And if you have any spare coins, help us support the show, pay us a coffee, buy one of my games, help us keep this going and paying the subscriptions and whatever. But now, getting back to our special guest, I'm talking about Anthony Meloro, the creator of Mystic Punks. We obviously talk a lot about Mystic Punks, the collaborators, the inspirations, how just came up with it, how I discovered Mystic Punk was I was traveling in the United States, how we got to talk to each other. We also talked about fatherhood, we talked about creative rituals, we talked about education, we talked about art, creativity, how they all mix together. We talked about spirituality and weirdness, all that really strange stuff that I like to talk about the show. We also talk about many amazing collaborators we have, people that are working on Mystic Punks, talk about concepts in the game. It's a very, very cool episode. I saw a lot of common between me and Anthony. It was really one of the episodes we see connecting. It was a great show. I loved it, and I hope you like it too. So listen up and let's get weird with Anthony Meloro. Hello, Anthony. Welcome to Weird Games and Weirder People. I've been following your work for a long time. I remember like the first time I stepped on Mystic Punk Zims was on a 20-sided store in New York. And this very, you know, handmade approach to it, and it's very counterculture approach to it, hooked me instantly. And I looked for all the other issues I could get, and your like other games and zines you released, and I was fascinated. And I'm very glad to be here, very glad to be collaborating with the Mystic Punks universe with an adventure for it. Well, I'm just like to say welcome and ask you, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing good. Thank you so much for having me on. I mean, the love is mutual. Big fan of yours as well, too. So, in everything. I remember those initial posts of you picking up the Mystic Punks and also Hot Jungle. Too, from 20-sided store, and I was like, awesome, great, this is awesome. It's been I guess a wild ride, to say the very least. I mean, Mystic Punks came out all the way in 2016, as you mentioned, just as a simple zine, and now it's been and through Exalted Funeral, it's been who started distroing the zine after it got a little bit of picked up a little bit of steam and popularity, and then it led to the collected edition, and now we're gearing up for our Kickstarter to release on March 20th, which we're super excited. Tons of amazing people, including yourself, of course. All involved. So very exciting.
And for those who might not know exactly what is Mystic Punks, and how did you come up with that weird and wonderful idea of making this weird game about just, you know, weirdos fighting against, it's a game for weirdos. It's fantastic fighting against these creatures, and they're like disguised in reality, and tell us a little bit about the history of Mystic Punks.
So like I said, it started in 2016, but I guess I could go back a little bit more before then. My initial roots come from the comics community, and especially with Do It Yourself Press, indie comics, all of those wonderful subcultures there. And I was I'd say 2015, leading up to 2016, anticipating the birth of my first son. I was moving away from comics, and I was really thinking back to my love of in my youth, because I'm super old now, of RPGs.
How old are you?
No, please, it's 46, and yeah, and okay. It's I feel it every day.
I just turned 40, so yeah, I feel it too. Yeah.
Yeah, one of us. It's been awesome, and the energy just keeps going, of course. But I was I was thinking back to my love of RPGs.
Yeah.
It's like in my youth of I had the red box of D&D when it came out in the 80s. I that spawned a love going into second edition. And we had a group that we played with that in middle school and in high school.
Were you into that kind of punk stuff while you were playing RPGs, and that's how you draw for it? How did you the punk and the RPG?
No, it's like that was definitely later in life. Like, I have always loved and been active in, like I said, in those comics, in those DIY communities, and in those music mm-hmm. scenes. And that was just sort of a melding of the two. And it was sort of like inadvertently sort of writing that zeitgeist at the time. Like, I didn't see Stranger Things when it came out, but I also noticed that, like, during that time it was picking up more steam, and that's one thing I'll touch on a little bit later. Like, I never sort of wanted Mystic Punks to be the kids in trouble idea or trope, or like it would break free from that, and where it can't be pigeonholed by that. And like I said, I'll get more into that later, but it's a big part of it was just seeing how I could take all my love and weirdness of B horror movies, of like I said, the subcultures in music, some of it punk, some of it, you know, being just electronic, mm-hmm. you know, country, anything that's considered a little bit more of that outsider. And that's where a big part of the heart of Mystic Punks is that, yeah, you're this weirdo. You're this individual that's, you are outside of whatever is quote unquote considered normal society, and you're protecting your hometown or whatever to against those supernatural threats. It was really, as the zines went on, and you know, the zines initially that came out first were solo RPG play, and those were all set in high school. So, and the idea was to, it would definitely would have a beginning and an end. And it eventually came to that end when Exalted Funeral released the collected edition. But I did notice during that time that, yeah, a lot of talk about it was, yes, this is like high school kids in trouble, and lead into that. And yeah, I just mentioned before, it's like I wanted to break through with that. And that is, I think, where we're successfully going with the TTRPG, with the group play, because I want you to be as weird as you possibly can for this. Yeah. If you want to be a slime person, go for it. If you want to be the disgruntled custodian, middle-aged custodian, go for it. go do it. Yeah.
But you're always kind of this outsider, and because of what you see and what you can face, you're always put in the fringes of the normality in society, right?
Do you think
about this? Why do we? It's a common trope, right? Always the people that go do those things are always
the ones that do not fit society and do not fit normal life, in a way, right? Do you feel like an outsider, a weirdo too? Do you identify with that? You know,
I feel like a dad all the time. I definitely feel like a normie.
But between the dads, because I mean, if you go like to a kids party, you know, and all the other dads are there.
weirdo for sure. Like, yeah, I guess you can see a few tattoos. Yeah. And it's I think especially when the conversation, that's a perfect example. Like when we have the conversation with those other family members and they find out that I'm an artist, my wife's an artist, and like, oh, you're like, it really sparks up. It sparks up an interest.
And they ask, but what do you do besides being an artist?
Right. We have the day job for sure. But yeah, it's always very interesting. But I I'm also like, it becomes, I become such a proponent, and I want to be a positive force for like pushing that and knocking out that stereotype of like, oh, artists, you know, well, yes, we're weird, but we definitely, yeah, we're here.
We are among you. Yeah.
Yeah. We're among you.
We are among you.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But it's, I guess to certain degrees, like, yeah, it's what I've been interested in has always sort of been, yeah, considered weird or out there. Like, I still collect tons of comics. I still get excited by weird stuff. Actually, just today, can I share something real quick? Can I share? Oh, look at, I just got this in the mail from, I don't know, from Fantagraphics. Yeah, it's this from 1991. Prey. It's called Prey, and it's like, this artwork is insane.
Yeah.
So I can't sort of wait to dig into that. But yeah, those type of weird things I always still gravitate to, and still the same thing with like even like music. It's like, oh yeah, let me listen to that that drone album that goes on for like 5 hours. That's that radical sort of experimental sound album. It just is always it's always there. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And have you ever been able to, you know, when interact with the other, you know, more normal dads of the circles, have you ever been able to, you know, drag some of them to experience the weirdness of this world and present this them? Because I have tried, and one of, we tried to like schedule a gang, but you know, it didn't work out, and you know, but I do try to, you know.
Yeah. Do you know, so the answer to that question is yes, and I have been successful to even play Mystic Punks, which is awesome, which is great. So they have a great time with it as well too. But I have a question. It's like, are you able in your gaming group? Is it so we're saying like no, there's no like quote unquote normal dads there, or is it?
Well, my current gaming group, you're basically three game designers, and you know, some of our friends that already play,
sure.
And we play each other games to test stuff out.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Still have yet to get the coveted normal dad.
Yeah. I did play with some people from work, you know, introduced the game for people in work, or made them remind of, you know, games they used to play when they were like younger. And one of them even came this year like to ask for suggestion for games for him to buy to play with his kid, which is about the same age as me, and it was pretty cool. Yeah, it's nice when you have the impact to make someone, you know, play again and have fun with this. I love that. Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And to get like that new generation of their children involved
Oh yeah.
is super awesome. And like, I'm beginning to experience that a little bit right now with both of my children. I have an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old, and they're my oldest he'll draw dungeons with me, and we'll come up with traps together. So we have fun. Yeah, we have fun with that. And and my youngest 5, he'll show me some pretty cool monsters, which are definitely leaning on like the Eldritch HP Lovecraft side, which is, I was like, I don't know how you are my son, I guess. I don't know. It's like, we're all about fostering that too, as well. Like, keep going, get weird with it for sure.
Yeah. And well, have you been playing with them? Role playing games? Have you ever tried or?
Yeah, not yet. And okay. I think my youngest is like maybe a little bit too young, but however but how about this? We recently had a story back and forth of us talking about coming up with like a pirate story together. So, and he was really into, so he, like, he's really into pirates right now. All things sort of sea creature, that and Pokemon he's recently discovered too. We sat down and we were just playing, and he really wanted to like sort of craft this story with me. And I mean, craft, you know, in, you know, very loose terms, but it was great to see like where his imagination was going. Like, Daddy, now we blast the cannon at the big squid. I was like, okay, let's do, and to do that. So, and I mean, that's pure joy, right? And but yes, my oldest is, he's getting, yes, he's I gotta start doing that with him before right now. I'll be honest though, we're usually playing Mario Kart together.
That's great.
And he's winning. Oh, he's so good. I was like how do you, you're 8? No, you, but it's, but it's been really awesome. But yes, soon, absolutely, cannot wait to play with them. DCC. I want to get them to get DCC.
I keep dreaming about having like a, you know, his friends and come here and they have a group and I jam them and I kill them all and they have fun. It's fun.
you do TPK on it.
And they have a blast. Everybody dying. It's
fun. Jugo, your dad is so. Diogo's dad is so tough. That's awesome. Yeah, for sure.
I'm joking, you know, but I mean, it would be fun. Like, I even, you know, suggest, because we hear the stories that people set up like a D&D club after school, and I would love to do that. Like, organize a few parents, and we have a D&D club for the kids to play and learn how to play games. Not necessarily D&D, of course. It's RPG in general, but it's something that would be cool. Like,
I absolutely. That would be awesome. I think it just also speaks to the universality of this hobby that we're in, and just how it really, I mean, yes. School grade children, you know, a little bit, you know, like elementary school, middle school, high school, like, yeah, it just is, it sort of just permeates through it all. And like, it's, they get super excited over it. And it's also, I think, really interesting to see like where, when I was growing up in the 80s, it was very much maligned. I mean, satanic panic and all of that stuff that was happening in America aside, it was like, it was more like the speaking of being an outsider, like being called a nerd or being associated with, like, you know, comics, role-playing games, any type of fandom, sci-fi, horror, you were, you know, immediately maligned. To see where that has changed now is so heartwarming, and to see like there is an inclusivity that has just like high school, like, again, all those kids are just like, we're doing this, and like there's no stigma against that. It's like it's in the blood, right? So it's like that is that's so awesome to see that.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Anthony, for the weirdos out there who might not know who you are, and I also ask guests to just introduce themselves instead of I just read a bio. So who is Anthony Meloro. How do I say your last name? Meloro?
Meloro. Yeah, you nailed it. Antonio Meloro.
And who is Anthony Meloro and what is that you do? And if you can share a small weird detail about yourself, maybe the way you choose your clothes or the way you do coffee or maybe a weird ritual you have that you do every day. I don't know. Something like this.
Oh, I love it. I love it. And we're getting, I love how we're getting deep right from the beginning. Who is Anthony Meloro? Geez, now I'm like, who am I?
Who we are, right?
That's, I just had therapy earlier this week, Diogo. I don't understand why I have to do it.
Yeah, this is kind of therapy. Yeah, I always say this. Yeah,
it's so hey everyone, I'm Anthony Paul with two L's, Meloro. So that's a sort of weird thing right there too. I am originally from Northeast Ohio in the United States. I have been living now though in Richmond, Virginia. It's almost going on 20 years. As I mentioned before, I've been in art communities as long as I could possibly remember. I have my bachelor's in painting and I have my master's in painting and drawing. And for a short while, I was a K-5 art teacher in Queens, New York, back in the early aughts, which was great. And that is where I met my soon-to-be future wife, which is she's still putting up with me, and we're still here, and we're like, when we moved to Richmond, so she could pursue her master's in painting. She's an absolutely wonderful painter, and I would be absolutely nothing without her. But we did think that we were going to, as soon as we came down here, we came from New York City, and we're like, oh, we're in Richmond, Virginia now. We'll immediately just go right back. Nope, almost 20 years later, here we still are. And I mean, I guess one thing that I would want the listeners to know about me is that I just love to create. And I think that it's, who am I? I'm a creator but different than I'd say a content creator. I love to make and I love to experiment and to see where, like what I'm doing now and what I hopefully can be seen for the foreseeable future in RPGs. It's just been an absolute dream for that. As far as like a weird thing, I like what you said about coffee. So yeah, what I've been doing, I don't know if this is a ritual or not, but I've been almost like religiously, I have to drink out of my Luigi coffee mug that I got in the Nintendo store up in New York City recently. The family, we all went up there to celebrate the Lunar New Year earlier in February. And for like the past 4 weeks, every morning, I have to have my Luigi cup to get that coffee nice. In there with a little bit of cream. So yeah, that's the weird thing. Like, give me the Luigi cup. So I can't wait till somebody sees me at a con and be like, yeah, Luigi comes after they hear this. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
You did mention like do you have a day job too? Like,
I do.
What do you do as a day job?
So I've been in art education professionally since I would say since about 2001. So I've taught at universities, as I mentioned before. I also taught at a public school for a while.
I wanted to be an art teacher. That was
really
what I wanted to do. Yeah, yeah.
Oh wow, nice. Oh yeah, yeah.
I went to art school. I did bachelor in design, but here design was inside art school, the National School of Art. I went to like the public university here, and what I really wanted was to do art, but my parents sent me to like to military school. And I kind of tricked them to, you know, oh, design is more like industrials and stuff. But I grabbed all the disciplines I could from like painting and you know, printing and all this, you know, this kind of stuff. And I wanted to be an art teacher. I had really good relationships with some of my teachers that I am in touch until today. And one of them, it's kind of a third grandma for my kids, you know.
Awesome. That's great.
Yeah.
That's so good. So that is, so wait. So guide me through this a little bit. Like you were going to the military, but you tricked your, oh wait, yeah. Tell me.
It's like military school is like high school here, like high school,
military gotcha.
High school. And they wanted me to, you know, take exams to continue like a military career. But then I went to, you know, do graphic design in an art school, and I wanted to, you know, to do master and study abroad to come back. But I saw how really hard teachers work and how very little money they make.
I realized that I
like expensive things like RPG books, and I said, well, if I wanna buy this, I should probably have like a day job where I can pay my bills and write my books on the side.
Sure. That is an absolute thing. That's amazing. So currently what I've been doing, I've been working for the Virginia Commonwealth University since 2007. Where I started as a drawing teacher. I was teaching, observational drawing to first year art students. And I did that from 2007 to about 2017. And again, with the birth of my first child, it was like, I would be teaching, but I was also doing where my full-time job is right now. I would be doing academic advising, and essentially what that is to help first-year students through our studio art curriculum, so they're able to go to whatever major they want: sculpture, graphic design, photography, cinema. I'm sorry, not cinema, film. There's a difference, actually. There's a difference.
So
it's been extremely rewarding, but I do teach in a very small capacity, but it's not in doing drawing anymore. And I do miss teaching drawing. There's a certain energy that happens in a studio with, and I've taught like all ages, but there's something about that high school, early collegiate age that you see these things click and just really begin to take off. And this is also where I think where a lot of students really begin to feel, especially in art school, a community begin to develop. They begin to really, they're working extremely close with these individuals during a semester, and they're seeing their ups and downs and how they're improving and where the weaknesses is. And like I've always viewed my job. I had a reputation for a while, Diogo, of being like an asshole. And I really, I'm really doing a mea culpa.
One of my favorite teachers had a reputation for being an asshole too.
Like he's stern, but he's fair. But yeah. I just couldn't.
That's the thing.
Yeah, I softened up though. I'm not saying that I wasn't still strict in my discipline in teaching, you know, concept of proportion or contour line, perspective, etc. It just was. I just couldn't maintain. This is middle age. I couldn't maintain that discipline. But I didn't want to be that either. So
yeah.
But I do miss it because there, like I said, there is that baked in, built in community that happens, and you get to take them through that journey and to see where they really begin to grow. I still see it as an academic advisor, but it's a little bit different to be in the, you know, in the trenches with them, like really doing the grunt work as well. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember you said about a teacher and one of them, which was one of my favorites because he was very knowledgeable and would share knowledge a lot. But one of his characteristics is that in his class you won't use like Photoshop. You want to make a poster, you use gouache, you use paint, you do it with your hands.
I love him.
People hated him.
I loved it.
Yeah, I loved him. And people hated him.
It's a lot of conversations that I have with students now too. That I mean, it's well, two things. It's really interesting to see, like, because a majority of the students I work with are 18 and 19, and we sort of think, as being cynical older people, like, oh, they absolutely know everything about working with technology because they were like born in the matrix, so to speak.
And this was when I was like 18, 20. Imagine now. Now would be impossible.
Yeah, absolutely. And what we still see, and is like what we have to remind ourselves, is that, yeah, they're still learning these things, and they're not as, it's not as intuitive. And it is but even more so, like, yeah, going that analog route, like where you don't necessarily have to rely upon digital media, is still super important. And that's like, that's where the magic is too, right? When you really begin to use those, that like you said, gouache or watercolor, acrylic or ink, and like all that. I feel like this may be a poor segue, but I just feel like what your drawings themselves are such an inspiration too, because they are so, well, they're just so gnarly and rad, and they remind me so much of my youth looking at like saying it's certain ones of them, of like old heavy metal posters. and I just love
that
seeing...
was amazing. He really liked that. Like, he had I took like extra classes with him. He would like talk about comics and metal hurlant, and he was very knowledgeable about European artists. And he was an illustrator. He's a very one of the few Brazilian illustrators to be nominated for one of the biggest children's book awards. He was incredible. And
That's awesome. Yeah. I wish I would have had an art teacher back then that would know about metal hurlant. Because definitely comics, back then was considered like 80s, 90s, like, that's low art. That's plebeian. That's not what we're striving for. But it's like, no,
but even in art school, like in university, you didn't bang with that?
No, because
you're a little bit older than me, but like 6 years, and Brazil is always behind 10 years. So I would imagine, you know.
I also did, like I said, I went for my in high school. Now I have to really think about it. Like, yes, my high school art teacher, like, you could maybe talk about comics, but he absolutely wasn't knowledgeable. This isn't a slight towards him in the least. It's like he wasn't knowledgeable. And then like going when I went to art school in Ohio, like, there definitely weren't comic classes there, and it was absolutely like you're going for your fine arts degree. So it's like, if we're going into painting, and again, like, I'm just talking about my experience, like, of course, like other universities.
In my city, we have like different schools, and we're completely different vibes. Like one more artsy, one way more technical, like for design, for example.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would. What I was going to mention was like my mentors and who I looked up in art school then were like they were the children of abstract expressionist painters, and like they were so and like we would listen to Thelonious Monk in the classroom with them, and jazz and bebop, and like we would absolutely get and we we felt that, and like we looked up to that, and we were like, yeah, let's tap into that. But it already was making that distinction between I would say, like, again, high and low art, like, yeah, it would be, yeah. So it came full circle with me when I was in grad school, and that's where coincidentally I met my co-creator Jay Domingo, who's absolutely amazing on Mystic Punks, working with the mechanics, helping with the lore, doing the layout for the books. We met in grad school 20 years ago, and we were absolutely like, if somebody would have told us, like, you two are going to work on an RPG together in 20 years, we would have been like, get out of here, what are you talking about? Yeah. But it's funny how it is. But during that time in art school with Jay, I was starting to get back into comic books. Like, I couldn't stop looking at the John Byrne 70s and run on X-Men. I was like, this is beautiful stuff. And so just bringing it all the way back to that. But yeah, definitely want to talk about Jay too. Jay's actually the one that pushed this to becoming a group play, to becoming a TTRPG. Like, he was, yeah. We reconnected. We've always talked to each other, like, over the years, mm-hmm. But we got reconnected when he discovered that I was actually making Mystic Punks. I had no idea that he liked RPGs.
You didn't know? Oh, okay.
No ideas. And so this was, like, super serendipitous.
You were already into RPGs.
Yeah. Like, we had no discussion of this. Like, when we were in schools, like, we never talked about, like, we talked about our youth, but we never brought up, like, oh yeah, like, I played 2E or anything like that. There's no mention of that.
Did you use it to hide it from people? Because, you know, I know I did back then, because I even lost girlfriends because they found out I played RPGs. So
I feel like I have a brother in you. Yes. there was a certain part. Yeah. There was a certain part that, again, like, yeah, it, like I said earlier, it was maligned, and it was like,
yeah,
I'm not getting any dates doing this. Yeah. Like,
you had to really know those people wouldn't turn on you before you say, you know, I have a dark secret.
Yeah, super, super dark secret. Fact zero. Let's talk of Thaco. Yeah. Let's talk about that.
I do fantasy math.
Yeah, right. That's awesome. That's, again, where I'm super lucky with my wife right now. Well, I actually knew that she would accept me because I was also in high school wearing contacts, and, like, mm-hmm. I have such bad eyesight. So when she saw me with just my glasses and was like, I like you, I was like, yes, I win. Absolutely.
I can be myself. Yeah.
I can be myself. But Jay was, he was at the time living, I believe, outside of Atlanta. He's in Athens, Georgia now. And he's a high school art teacher as well, too. He teaches graphic design as well, too. Nice. So that's where his career path is on until we both go full time into RPGs. But what he was doing was running a lot of D&D 5e. Like, in the area. I had no idea. And then when he found out about Mystic Punks, he's like, what the hell is this? And then he's like, bro, we need to make this a thing. I was like, let's do it. And that's where we are today with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where it is.
That's mm-hmm. awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Anthony, I always ask guests here to, because it is RPG for weirdos, and this is the weird podcast in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Can you define what is weird for you in your own words, and how do you explore that in the games you make and in your life in general?
Yeah, that's a great question. Weird for me, maybe it also goes with what we were talking about, like, what we think of punk is as well. You know, it's like, it's always the outsider to a certain extent, but weird for me is absolutely like a do-it-yourself aesthetic. And I think like the best way to sort of, for me anyway, to sort of explain that would be talking about like shot on video horror films or like B movie horror films, low budget, where there's always, it's about the ambition behind it. The execution may not always be perfect. It may be like a little bit sloppy, but that's not a bug. That's a feature. Like to have it be slightly off. Like the acting may just be a little bit bad, just like in role-playing games. You know, it's like we're definitely not polished actors, thespians. We are.
Oh, yeah.
We're doing it. But that's where, again, the fun comes from it as well. So I have a massive love of trash movies, trash cinema, like especially within like the horror and the sci-fi genres. So for that, I really dig on that knowledge, and I try to bring that forth in like my writings, like try to make them a little gross, try to make them a little bit bizarre for sure. And I also, I mean, I was born and raised Catholic, and I was, there's certain things that I like to sort of touch into, not so much as taboo, but maybe it's a little bit of therapy for me. Like I didn't see this isn't B movies, but I didn't see The Exorcist until I was 38. Cause I was afraid.
I didn't see it yet. It's in my plans.
Is it because it, you know, a little bit of a fear of it, or just
I,
not?
Oh yeah. I was terrified as a kid. I was raised Catholic too.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's because I'm autistic, but I was really scared. I like the scariest movie I saw as a kid was like the toy that kills, like the Chucky, the
Child's Play.
Yeah, that's and that was already too much for me. And like I saw Alien, like the movie, yeah. After I was 30 years old, you know.
Yeah. So you got some catching up to do, but no pressure from me. It was like I had friends that would laugh at me. They're like, "You haven't seen The Exorcist yet?" I was like, "You don't understand. This is some deep seated Catholic stuff going on
My parents had this long hallway between the living room and the rooms, our bedrooms.
Mm.
And you know those stories about, you know, getting in front of the mirror and saying, I know, I killed Joan d'Arc or something. And they would say like names of usually women, if you repeat it three times and you flush and this woman would come out of the mirror and kill you.
What?
So, kids invent this insane thing.
Yeah.
So I was super scared of that. And then we had like a bathroom door in the middle of the hall between the living room and our bedrooms. So every time I would go from my bedroom to the living room, I would just run through the hallway. And if I wanted to go back to my bedroom from the living room, I would have to, you know, I would stop writing in the boundary, you know, between the rooms and the hallway. I would stop, take a deep breath, and then run to the other side. No.
That's heartbreaking, but sort of rad too as well. Yeah. Like you had your own ritual to do that. But no, I hear no, absolutely. So it would be. Yeah, just to go back to that question, it's like, yeah, having, like, taking from that sort of splatter, gore, weird sci-fi, like, and again, that doesn't mean, like, I don't have love for, like the major block, but, like, Alien, oh my god, like, it, like what a beautiful film from Ridley Scott, and it definitely... I do gravitate more towards that sort of dirty rawness, and again, where that ambition may not—it's all right there. And I'm sorry. Was there a second part to that question as well, too?
How do you approach that in your own work? As you said, you talked about your writing and etc. And about your life, how do you approach the weird in your life? Do you seek it? even like watching those movies, or you're seeking any other part of your life, any other kind of weird experiences that you can relate to this, you know, this love of this rough made things, you know?
Yeah. It's I mean, in terms of like to my life, I feel that it's I definitely feel like what I'm doing in terms of RPG, in terms of the art making, in terms of like my own drawings as well too, which were somewhere in the early Mystic Punk zine, and like there will be my own artwork in the new core rulebook coming out, but it's
it's very relatable, like this aesthetic of low budget me movies, and with the early zines, it's very much like it's handmade. It's not perfect. You have like scratches. If you miss something, you just scratch and write afterwards. It's great. It's very relatable, and
I want that immediate experience, and I think it talks to the product itself. You know, it being a zine. So like by nature, those things are rough and tumble and quick and dirty. So I guess I'm selling out because I'm making out to do it. No, like it's awesome. Mystic Punks is going now, and like it still has that dirty DIY B movie gore flavor. It's still all there. Like it's still absolutely there. Yeah, but is there absolutely like a more polishedness to it? Absolutely, for sure. Yeah. And that's not, I don't discount that or think that like, oh no, it's like, no, I embrace.
No, it's a different phase. Yeah.
It's a different phase. It's absolutely a different phase. It's about like how it goes in. I mean, I think I explained about my creative practice for that and like how I do it for when I'm writing and in my art. But as far as like in like, day to day in life, I don't know like how much it goes into that, but it's like I try to keep positive as much as I possibly can, especially in the world that we're currently living in. So, and I find like it becomes super like if this is something that I can share as a creator with everyone, and if that brings them like happiness, and that storytelling can unlock like a weird thing in them, then I feel like I've been successful for sure. Because like I said, there's just so much I think in this world that can get us down, and so much darkness that I feel like we have a responsibility to a certain extent to be that positiveness, to be that light, to sort of show that, hey, weird is good. we can do this, and we can be, super super awesome together. Oh man, that was really that was really sweet.
That's great. And have you always been this way? Have you always been positive and, you know, trying to be like a beacon of light? And then if you did, or even if you don't, how did you learn to be this way? Because I remember something that happened today, you know. I woke up with my kid, and I have this rule, like, wake up, you can't see TV for at least 30 minutes after wake up. So what he does is, like, he wakes up and he goes, Alexa, 30 minutes. And he go plays with on his room, and he plays with Legos. And sometimes the 30 minutes passes, and he continues playing, and that's great. But sometimes he doesn't do anything, he just lays down on the sofa waiting for the 30 minutes because it's a room, you know?
That's great. I need to do that with my children.
Yeah. And he was watching TV. I said, oh, you know, keep watching. I will do breakfast. And after the breakfast, we will go do no homework. And we ate breakfast, and we were going to do homework, but he grabbed the TV, forgetting we know we're doing homework, and said, no, we are going to do homework. And then he immediately said, oh, you know, God damn it, or something like this.
Yeah.
You know, like a curse word or fuck it. I don't remember exactly.
Sure, sure.
And I said, "What? Why? What's going on? Didn't we talk? Didn't we, you know, made an accord or something?" Mm-hmm. "Yeah, but I'm upset and blah blah blah." "Yeah, I know you're upset. I'm totally understandable. I would be upset too if I wanted to do something. But why are you talking like this? Like, he learned. What am I saying? Like, you don't see me or your mother saying this when we're doing something we don't want. How? Why are you saying this? What are you learning?" "He's learning from my parents, of course." "I know it." "And he knows." And he says, "Yeah, I'm learning from grandma and grandpa." "Yeah, I know. But do you think it's nice when you do that? When you see them doing this, do you think it's good?" "Yeah, no. Do you think it helped? Do you feel better?" And I started asking this.
Yeah.
And then I ask, "When you grow up, do you want to be more like grandpa and grandma, or more like, you know, mother and you know, father?" And yeah, like, so it's like this, because when something bad happens, it's very easy for us to say, "Yeah, fuck it," and get super angry, and it spreads the negativity around, you know, and things get worse, because it would be very simple for me. And he says, "Oh, let's do homework," and say, "Yeah, fuck it," and "What you're saying to me? Who are you?" Would very easy. My parents would immediately do that. And things would escalate, right? So it's an effort to be positive. It's something I would say, right?
Absolutely. I think you really hit it on the head, because it is a constant effort, and it doesn't mean that we can't give into that negativity or have the feelings.
We do. It happens. Oh, we do. Yeah, it's inevitable.
Listeners, I am not a saint. I'm not a saint.
I love one book I read about, like, raising, like, being like this positive caretaker and etc. Like, psychologists wrote the book, but like in the last chapter is a chapter about moments we failed. Like, they telling everything they're teaching you, they say we're parents too, and here are the moments we failed too. So yeah, it's possible not to, like, we learn all these things, but yeah, it's, of course, it's, we will screw up too. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just like, it's a learning process. I think, like, it's one of the things that when I was growing up, and like, I realized in my late teens, for me anyways, for my late teens, I was like, "Oh, my parents don't have the answers to everything." Like, my parents, and I think, like, it wasn't necessarily an idolization, but it was a realization that, like, oh, they just don't know. And I think it becomes super important to sort of break that much earlier to, like, to my children. Like, I am not perfect. So we're learning this together. I don't have all the answers, but what I do have is love and support, and I'm here to help you through this. And of course, I will fail, and I will, like, if I raise my voice, I will try my best not to do so the next time. But yeah, it is tough. And like, I'll be honest, like, I never, like, my wife and I, we didn't think we were going to become parents, and then we started much, you know, much I guess is considered more normal now, but much later, like in our late 30s, and now like, we're like, yeah, let's have another one. Like, here where we are, it's but I wouldn't have it any other way. So it's I don't know if it's so much about being like a beacon of light. Like, I'm a cleric, I'm a paladin. Yeah. In terms of
my question was, how, when did you have an insight, like, being this way? Because I wasn't like this.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I've always been, even pre-children, like, pretty empathetic, and like, so that's a quality that I was lucky. You know, very lucky enough to have. Not, I mean, I think that's something that you're born with, but I think it's also something that's nurtured as well too, from external factors. So from family and friends.
From someone in your family or someone that was close?
I would say, like, both my mother and my father, like they, it was definitely generationally. I mean, it's much, of course, it's much different in terms of certain types of love, but that love was there. But that empathy, that empathy was also very much present as well too. And like, it was raised in a household where you really tried to like take a step back and begin to try to assess the situation. Not all the times, not all the times it worked, but yeah, it was less about like less on hatred, more on try of like understanding, you know, and like try to sort of quell those great things and try. Not again, not always successful, but we, you know, we're all just trying our best. But for my, for me, just putting a head on, like putting a pin on it, like especially coming through, like I think it's always been a part of me, but especially being teaching in public schools and teaching in universities and having these individuals come up, these students come up to me with extremely specific, issues or concerns, medical, family, whatever. It was absolutely like, we don't know everyone's situation. So having that empathy and having that sort of grace to be like, let's talk about this. Let's move on. And it just sort of went, I will admit this, like at the end of the day, after having some of those conversations with students, and then my kids come up to me, I'm a little bit burnt out, but no, you make it work out. But no, I've been pretty fortunate to just like, continue with that mindset. I mean, there's always room for improvement, but there's also room for forgiveness too. I find myself sometimes being hypercritical of myself. Like, why aren't I doing, like, why can't I be better? That may be the Catholicism yoga. Like, why can't I be better? They're recovering Catholic. Yeah. It's, but it's, it, yeah, that aside, I think forgiveness of ourselves is super important as well too. I mean, it's so we can move on, and still be productive. Heavy questions. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. Can we dig more into that? Like, you're seeing hypercritical. What are you more, if you want to share, like, what are more critical about yourself and something that you forgave yourself with? What was it, and how did you manage to, you know, be more forgiving about yourself? I know, especially, I don't know if it happens to you being creative, if you, it's always, you know, demanding to be more creative, to be producing more, to be like working more. And if you learn how to even, you know, keep being productive, but also being more understanding that productivity is not, you know, a very scalable thing. And sometimes these things will vary. How do you deal with that hypercritical, and how did you learn how to go a little bit beyond that?
Yeah, can I just say my wife, and can we say next? No, it's like next question. My wife, all the way. No, absolutely. But my wife is. I think it's always good, and I'm very fortunate in this to have a partner to have these discussions with as well too, right, especially as having somebody that's another artist to vibe off one another and to share our anxieties. And I guess listeners, like, it's like it doesn't end. Like, I'm 46 and there's still insecurities that happened. Yeah,
it never goes away. I think that's
absolutely. It's about how you're coping with it and how you're dealing with it. But I guess why I'm bringing that up is, like, I remember, like, naively thinking in my early 20s, like, oh, when I'm 40, it'll all be figured out. It's like, nope, not at all. I am hypercritical, and I think, like, that's always a double-edged sword. Like, you're always, like, it's like,
that
what
was something
drives
else
you?
I was going to ask you, like, even though it's bad, is also something that kind of pushes us a little bit in a way, right?
Yeah, that's I think, like, what, like, I would imagine, like, that's what drives a lot of artists. Like, let me keep continuing, let me keep trying to improve. Like, like what becomes the next, what's the next thing. Yeah. And there's certain things like where, like, I would, like, looking back now, just in hindsight, it's, I would take breaks, and I would, so like where I would be, for example, like early 2000, I'm sorry, like 2010, 13, to like 13, 14, I had a little bit of success with comics. I was published in a few anthologies, and it was very gratifying. It wasn't taking off to the level that I thought it would, that I wanted it to go to. And that, yeah, that was frustrating. So I shelved it. I was just like, I don't think like this is working for me right now. And then when I came back, it came back and it took on the form of a Mystic Punks as well. So it's like just showing like where it, I guess what I'm getting at is like having that tenacity and like being able to sort of stepping back and saying like, okay, if something isn't necessarily working right now, it's okay to quote unquote take a break. It's okay to sort of like focus on you or focus on other things. I was also fortunate enough like to have that same job, working at the university. So I'm sympathetic to that as well too. If like other individuals are like, no, this is a, I have to do this. This is my lifeblood. Yeah. And like, so, but yeah, it's for me to take being able to do those things and it is hard to put in now to put in a little bit more of breaks. I haven't done it recently, but where now it's becoming very humbled by all the success and support that I'm getting from Mystic Punks. It's an amazing feeling. And like right from that, I feel extremely successful. You know, it's just like period, full stop.
Yeah.
But I think it is important to also take a step back, like, you know, to be like, oh, let's rest. Let's assess like what to move on and what would the next thing be. Like for me, I know it'll still be with an RPG, still expanding Mystic Punks to something else, to make it hopefully larger. But also it's like, you can't keep going. You're just going to burn out. Like, it's just like, I can't make hits all the time. So you need to take a step back from that. Yeah.
And how do you rest, from creativity? Do you, because you said you love creating, and one thing I noticed for me that maybe even though, if I'm not creating something for publication, I have to be creating something in a way. Mm. Otherwise, I would feel bad. Like, I don't know.
Oh.
It's kind of therapy in a way. I don't know.
Sure.
I have to put my creativity to use in some way, like put those ideas out. And you mentioned taking a break in 2010 or something, and Miss Punk is in 2016. So between this time, even though not writing anything for publication, how did you engage with your creativity, or you're totally comfortable in just letting it, you know, rest for a long while?
Yeah, it's taking pleasure in, like for me, which isn't a very difficult thing, and just sort of daily things. So it's during that time specifically, like 2014, that's like, I'd say 2013, 14 to like 2016 is when that I wasn't really doing any type of comic work. Like I still would want to be actively at least engaging in some type of research, or what I would consider research. Let's dive more into trash films. like, which I think like, it's like, oh, Anthony watched movies. It's like, yeah, that's research. It's like, I knew that I would maybe be like writing notes here or there, but it would be, it was super interesting to just like take like develop more of like a cinematic vocabulary, regardless of like what it was, B movies, etc., whatever, and like having those like really dissecting those films, and then taking like how I, or what I would do, take that lore or putting my own flavor in it into my own writing. So like keeping that as research and also reading as well too. Like it'd be between some fiction, but also nonfiction. I'm doing that right now. I mean, I think it's really important for artists to have a bevy of influences. Like it's great to, and again, not to slight anyone, like if you're on this corridor and if it's like, well, one track thing, sure, awesome. But I just think like to keep your mind stimulated and to keep, to just see how, what other individuals are thinking or just like other modes of thought or just like what happened.
Yeah.
Like I'm just like, for example, like I'm reading an account on the Civil War, one of the first groups of snipers in the American Civil War, like real accounts. And I was like, oh, let's dive into that. Like, yeah. And it's like these very personal stories of this Massachusetts regiment of sharpshooters. And it's very fascinating from that historical standpoint. Like, will it work its way into like RPG? I don't know, but it doesn't hurt, right? It doesn't hurt to like have these broad influences. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think there is a way that people talk about how this, you know, I think it's the artist's rest, which is this rest that's not only, you know, doing nothing. It's studying, it's, you know, growing in a way, right? Mm-hmm. Researching and, you know, and as game designers and artists, it's very important, as you said, like seeking influence from everywhere. I think it's very enriching because, that great saying that I love, it's from one thing or 1,000 things. So you can study very different things. And from these things, you can incorporate something for what you like to do. Like, I was, you know, studying fiction, and there is this saying that when you're writing a short story, you can imagine the short story as the last chapter of a novel. So it's, you know, it's a great way to see that. And I was thinking maybe when writing like a one-shot adventure, you can imagine it as the last adventure of a long epic campaign too. And write it in that way.
Oh, I love that. Oh, that, yeah, that's awesome. And that's exactly to that point that you made. It's keeping you engaged as well too. It's like, and I think like that, and it doesn't have to be like something that's entirely fully fledged or rendered or whatever you want to call it. It's just another thing that you can that you can go on to. So that's great. Yeah, cool. Yeah.
Do you have any kind of, you know, creative ritual? Anything you engage it before you start working on your art or on your writing that helps you get into the mood and have the creative juices flowing?
Well, I mentioned the Luigi cup of coffee in the morning, so there's absolutely that. Not right now, but like sometimes.
Did you have?
Yeah. One thing that I cannot do, that I can't do for when I'm writing, like if other writers can do this, like my hat's off to them. If they can listen to music while they write, that's great. I have to have total silence. Like I'll usually have my headphones on, noise canceling, just so I can sort of be in my own head.
For even that, like music with no lyrics, like instrumental music.
No, I can't do it. Yeah, I can't do it. I can't do it at all. I don't know why. Now that's not the truth. That's not the same though for when I draw. I have to have music on. I have to have I'll whatever the mood takes me. Like music is definitely when I'm doing artwork. Like I said, for all the drawings I did in the new Mystic Punks book, it's like there's definitely a soundtrack there or what I'm doing. I don't know if this is showing my middle-agedness or not, but I'll have podcasts on. the background, in the background as well too. But I'm going more towards like, and this is definitely feeding into, here's a ritual. Yeah. When I'm drawing, and if I've been listening to this podcast called QAnon Anonymous, and it deals with conspiracy theories. It originally dealt with, are you familiar with QAnon, what happened?
Yeah.
This podcast would debunk, obviously, just the insanity associated with QAnon. Thankfully, for better, for sure, QAnon isn't as much here in America. I think it's still here, but it's not as prevalent. The podcast has shifted to more like other historical conspiracy theories, and like, it's just a whole world of like, speaking of research, I'm didn't know about that. Like, what is this? Like, this is a
very
like,
gameable stuff too.
Very gameable stuff, like UFO cults. It's just one I'm listening to right now. I'm like, this is fascinating. So yeah, it's like one, it's, I'm like, as far as like a pre-ritual or a pre-game, nah, not so much. I like to dive in and just like see where it sort of takes me. And the same also with drawing, but obviously like for drawing, I have to have like some type of music or podcast going on in the background.
Yeah. And you know, we're talking about influences, and one thing I love asking guests, if maybe you have maybe an artist or a creator who have influenced you, maybe you took as a mentor for the way they approach the work or the way they act in the scene. Do you have anyone that helped you model the way you are as an artist, as a creator, and what did you learn from them?
Wow, that's a great question. That's a heavy question. I think I can answer that more in terms of that artist that I just always look up to. Like, I don't know if I've necessarily modeled myself after them.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's a Mobius
look up
for
to,
sure.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Mobius, Joe Dowoski. Alejandro Jodorowsky. Am I mispronouncing? I may be mispronouncing that. I'm sorry, listeners.
I don't know.
It's like the ankle, like that. But also his films like El Topo, Holy Mountain. Now I have to look over at my. I'm looking at my comics right here. Like I have like all of my, which is just a small sect of, like what are. Because like there's just so many. Oh, of course not. Oh, these are Toku, like Kamen Rider, like always a big fan of Tokatsu, if I'm pronouncing that right too. Like this is like the eternal fight of evil, of good against evil. Like that's because I think that when I'm writing, I always imagine there is, even though you're an outsider and you're a punk, you're still like the hero. And like, I still believe in good triumphing over evil. And I think that archetype is, I mean, not only is it timeless, but it's, I do think it's sort of important as well too. Trying to think of other ones. Oh, like I said, John Byrne, like especially his 70s, run on X-Men. Who else? Alex Toth, for sure. Amazing. Just his Black Canary is just so awesome.
Alex who?
Alex Toth, T-O-T-H. Alex. His beautiful, beautiful, just like such simple yet complicated line work, like just so wonderful. Like especially, like I said, his Black Canary. Just a whole bevy of 80s manga, like who creators of the Fist of the North Star, always love. Oh, of course, Akira. Like, yeah, it's all those. It's just too many. Too many to list. But I will say this. Like, if I have to have like give a specific, like sort of, like, guide in like who I looked up to in terms of the way that Mystic Punks was formed, it's the cartoonist Charles Forsman, who did he did the comic The End of the Fucking World, which was developed into a Netflix series. And what's, I think, so amazing, and what I still tell my students to this about this, is that The End of the Fucking World started as like just a dollar zine. Like, it was just simple photocopied, like, and it was lo-fi but high output, and it was just such an amazing piece of comic art that I think it was just sort of destined to become like what it was, and like, and to see, and so when I tell students, I'm like, and I have these zines, and then to see like where it eventually came into like a Netflix series, yeah. It just was, it's like, students like, wait, what, this started as a zine? I'm like, yeah. Because yeah. I think sometimes it's students or people starting out in our field are like, they want the immediate satisfaction that, like, it's like, let's, like, okay, give me the Marvel movie. I'm working on the Avengers right now, right? Give me that. It's like, no. Yeah. It's like, we're not. So like, yeah, I will say that the first Mystic Punk zines were modeled after that. It's like, let's make a zine. Let's just put it out. Let's see what happens. Not much different than what I did before, but like, I think like definitely more focus. So I don't know if Charles will ever hear this, but thank you, Chuck. That was big inspiration.
Yeah, awesome. Hello, wonderful weirdos. This is Diogo Nogueira again, and today I'd like to talk to you about one of my favorite games, a game that I created, and you know, if you listen to the podcast, I love dinosaurs, and it's called Primal Quest. It is a weird stone and sorcery adventure game. It's a NSR game, which is this game that caters to the old school style of play, but has more modern and more cinematic gameplay adapted to our modern sensibilities. It has adventures with dinosaurs, ancient civilizations, spirity, sorcery, aliens, elder gods, and much, much more. It's very pulpy. It has, you know, a complete rule set, a mini hex crawl, an adventure introductory adventure. You can find it at Exalted Funeral, itch.io, DriveThruRPG, and your best local game store. And we're releasing more stuff for it, so stay tuned and play Primal Quest. So let's get back to the weird with our chat. And you know, talking about Mystic Punks, you already said we're gonna have a Kickstarter starting soon in March. And one thing I always love asking guests is, what is the weirdest thing from Mystic Punks, and your favorite thing from it too? From this project that is launching soon.
The weirdest thing. Just anything from Mystic Punks that's the weirdest thing?
Yeah, the weirdest thing, and then your favorite thing. And then we talk a little bit about the project, what people
it. I'm going to combine the two. I think the weirdest thing is the bestiary that we have going in there. I'm really proud of the bestiary. Jay Domingo and I really worked hard. We worked hard over the entire book, but I think for the bestiary, it's super special because I think we're just sort of firing on all cylinders, having some super weird monsters for y'all to fight and engage with. Maybe not fight, maybe talk to. That's a part of Mystic Punks too. Like, you could be nonviolent as well too, yeah. And just maybe resolve these situations peacefully. But I don't know if that would happen so much with some of like the elder gods in there. But that said, you can have you could definitely try. But yeah, those like that would be the weirdest thing. But yeah, that I think is one of the my more favorite things too. I'd also say like another favorite thing would be, I mean, Jay's layout is, I've already seen it. It's like, it's already going to be, it will be my favorite thing. But I also like just all the spells that we have in there too, as well. So it's like a lot of, where you have fun with magic. I mean, like DCC, we, magic is raw. Magic is uncontrollable. And we sort of, we don't quite have it in that same DCC vein, but it's like, we definitely try to emulate the just, hey, magic can be dangerous. And, but you still want it. You still want to have that power.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah.
And tell us a little bit about the project. Mystic Punks is becoming an RPG now and launching now in March. And then what can people get there in the project?
It's a, so like I said, the Kickstarter is launching on March 20th. And there's going to be four main tiers for this. We'll have a digital tier that would have
this is probably releasing around the launch, or maybe a little couple of days afterwards or something like this.
It's
links will be in the on the show notes too. So awesome. If you're weirdo are listening to this, look on the show notes for the link and go back. Mystic Punks.
You could get just a PDF of the core rulebook. We're hoping like the core rulebook will be, I mean, we're still in that development phase, but we're looking between like maybe 200 to 250 pages. So it's going to be a big one. You could also get, if you want to, the core rulebook, the physical copy, it'll be hardback. Ben Mara did the cover for it. Fantastic cartoonist, super stoked to have him involved, very, very honored to have him involved. You'll also be able to get, in addition to the core rulebook, a game master screen designed by the Spanish artist Paul Eduardo, which is, his work is phenomenal, mind melting. And then what we're also working on, which Diogo, we're so honored to have you part of, we're going to have adventure books come out, three separate volumes, and you're included obviously in one of those volumes, so those are coming out as well too. We have so many amazing, like, let me just real quick talk about the artists that we have and the writers that we have. Like I said, Ben Mara, Paul Eduardo, Tia Roche is just absolutely wow. Nathan Tristiga is back. He did the cover for the Quick Start Rules, and he's back with some just amazing work. Original artist Mike Knoppers, who did the cover for the collected edition, he's back as well too. Mike, always killer. Zach Hazard Valpin, who's been just, I've known Zach for I think going on like 15 years now, and just to see like where his work has been going is always a treat. David Hoskins is going to be in there as well too. Joda Cravo, Sally Cantorino, who listeners may know that like of her work from other EF releases, but she also did the covers for Trial at Wendards and the Crypt Mystic Punks Adventures. So she's there as well too. Shout out to my wife, she has some work in there too. She's doing some border
awesome
in there, so very cool to see that. And it definitely adds it like a very unique eye to it. Andrew Tiger Wizard from Epic Levels is in there, he's doing it as well too. We got to get you in there for like maybe a later release. Yeah, I want your artwork in there later. Really, I need that. But as far as writers, like I said, Diogo is obviously there. We have Levi Combs from Planet X Games, John Hambone McGuire from 321 Action and Vintage RPG. Mm-hmm. Joey Royale from Get Haunted Industries.
Yeah.
It's great. And
Yeah,
thank you. Yeah. And again, it's so humbling. It's just so awesome to see like where this is all going. So we're super excited. We're hoping that, and we're pretty confident that people are going to love this, but yeah, we're super stoked on it.
Yeah. Well, at least people make are having a lot of fun, a lot of great names and a great mm-hmm. crew and yeah, it looks fantastic. I'm excited to see it.
Cool.
Yeah. Sorry. Do you have any other hobbies, you know, besides role-playing games and that you engage maybe creatively just, you know, for your own sake?
Right now, no. Like here, something really red hot, everyone. It's like I'm doing more crosswords
being a parent and then writing games. Where do you gonna have time for another hobby? I mean, come on.
I mean, I feel like I'm sort of living the dream already though, right? So yeah. I have an amazing family. I have I'm doing something that I absolutely love, and yeah, and I'm getting awesome comics in all the time too, and awesome role playing stuff. And I actually got because I'm thinking of you and your sci-fi love. Are you familiar with like the journaling game Notorious?
Notorious.
The Star Wars influence is amazing.
Right here.
There it is. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I just got that in, and it's like it's
and the
really...
art's incredible too. Yeah.
It's really beautiful. So yeah, good, amazing work, Jason Price. Like, yeah, this is really, really cool. So it's like, yeah, I feel like I win. I feel like it's all good. It's all great. So yeah, just take it one day at a time as well too. Yeah. And I mean, I'd be remiss not to say all of this is super possible too from Exalted Funeral as well too. Like they've had the faith of just like of believing in Mystic Punks and really getting it out there too. So yeah, so for Matt and Kristen and that entire crew, like nothing but eternal love too.
I owe a lot to them too, and I love their work and what they're doing for mm-hmm. for the hobby and everything. Anthony, what would you say would be the weirdest game you ever played? And it can be RPG or video games. Or do you actually play games with some regularity, or how is game playing nowadays?
I mean, everything has been pretty Mystic Punks, but it's like if a weird game that I've played recently. I'm thinking about like back in my youth. I would say the weirdest game I've ever played, like to this day, that probably is burned in my memory is Operation. do you know of Operation? It's like where you stick the it's like not an RPG, like not really even a it's not a board game. It's just I think the anxiety and that it induces in someone, it's actually a little bit unhealthy. So, and the minor shock that you get, it's like, I think that is by far one of the weirdest games that absolutely left a mark on me. I mean, honestly, the last time that I've played, like I haven't been to a con since Gary Con last year, and I played, the last weird game I played was DCC, which was awesome. It was about kaiju, and it was somebody did like it wrote a kaiju adventure. I'm sorry, Hector, I'm blanking on the name. Oh no, Hector, I'm so sorry if you're listening to this.
You got Hector. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, that's well half of the work.
It's he wrote this amazing kaiju adventure, and it was super weird. And it's like I knew there was kaiju in it, but I didn't know like how they were gonna sort of work it into the fantasy world. So it went from it definitely went from you know, high fantasy to sci-fi. Really nice. So it was sort of awesome in that regard. Yeah. So that was that. I would say outside of Mystic Punks, like that was like the next weirdest thing. But that's been a while. Like, yeah, I've just been running a Mystic Punks game with my gaming crew, and just doing everything, working on Mystic Punks in general. So yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you know, we are almost an hour and a half in, and now, if you allow me, I want to ask a little bit more personal questions, not necessarily related to gaming. And since you talked about, you know, being raised Catholic, and how is this for you now? How is religion and spirituality? And do you have anything of this? Is it helpful for you in any way? Or do you have any kind of philosophy that helps you, you know, navigate life and the tough moments in life? And whatever it is that you do that helps you, talk a little bit about that and where you draw that, where you learn that from.
Sure. Yeah. It's a, I am not a practicing Catholic anymore. That is but yeah, I was, raised and confirmed in Catholicism. I have many different.
Do you believe in God?
There we go. There we go. There's the question.
Let's go straight to it. Do you?
You just really hit it there. No, I love it. How about this? It's not maybe it's agnostic, but it's a. I don't know, but I would like to think there is some greater thing out there. What I'm afraid of, which is probably going to happen, is that there's just the empty void, Geogo. But it's that's what I'm afraid of, that there's nothing. But then again, it's like, I guess it makes.
Why would be afraid of there is nothing? Because if there is nothing, it doesn't make a difference, right?
You're right.
You'll be dead anyway.
You solved it. This is, by the way, the best therapy session I've had in a while. Thank you. that's obviously a very good point. But I mean, yeah, it's like, I think as being human, I think, I mean, and especially getting, not old, but getting up there, it's like more, and having a family and having young children, like mortality plays into it, like for sure. Especially where, it definitely didn't in my 20s or even I'd say to a certain extent to my early 30s. It was much more, it wasn't completely carefree, but it was, there's obviously a lot more at stake. So, I mean, yeah, it's, you know, do I believe in God? It's too easy to say yes or no, I guess. It's like, the bigger answer would be like, I don't know, but I hope if there is, there's some type of, again, positivity that we could see through like all the mess and all the darkness like I said, I'm not practicing any type of religion. I don't consider myself extremely spiritual, but I think just going back to what we touched on before, it's important just to be good to one another and good to yourself, like regardless of wherever an individual is coming from. But, you know, that said, I definitely have I'm very much like anti-fascist and anti-racist, and it's like than anti-homophobic. It's like, these are things that I feel very strongly about, and it's like, these are things that are it's important to recognize that these are things that we have to work together as people mm-hmm. to really come together and have that inclusivity over. And I'm hoping, like, I don't know how much Mystic Punks is doing that, but I would also hope that in my job that I'm able to give a little bit of comfort to my students and to those individuals that I work with to sort of, you know, at the end of the day, they can be like, hey, Anthony is a good guy. Like he's there to help. Yeah. He's there to help me out. So I'm hoping that's it. Yeah. Heavy, man. This is good.
That's the stuff. And you know, you talk about doing therapy, and one of the reasons I ask about religion, spirituality, or philosophy is about, you know, the tough moments in life. You know, I suffer from anxiety, but, you know, everybody has tough moments, and, you know, sometimes you have some resource that helps you navigate these moments. For me, you know, I was raised Catholic too, but for me nowadays, it is Stoicism, you know, philosophically, you know, I read a lot about this, and kind of helps me out with anxiety and stuff, and also being a parent too. And what I wanted to ask you is that, do you have anything like this, any teachings, any kind of philosophy, even if it's still something you learned through Catholicism, or anything that you learned maybe from your wife? I know you talk about that. And my wife is a lot like a guide to me too. She has helped me and taught me so much. But I mean, do you have anything like, she got it, this she got for me. Now she has a tattoo on her arm that says, this too shall pass. It's something like from Stoicism, you know?
Yeah. I don't know if I have any philosophies that I follow that, like, from other individuals, but I would, there are certain things that I do that I feel that are able to center myself. Like I do, like, as far as like, I try to, when things get a little bit, when I'm too anxious or I'm feeling like I'm too much in my own head, like I try to meditate a little bit. Like I try to do some breathing exercises, or just, but I also find that is one thing that really, if this is a philosophy at all for me, I love to run. I love to go run. So I think exercise, my wife jokes, and she's like, whenever you're sort of hot and bothered, it's like, I just see you take off and you go for a run to like work it all out. And it's true. It's like, yeah. I sort of like that exhausted feeling coming back from exercise or from a run. But yeah, it's, I have read some philosophers, some Western, some Eastern, but I've never like dove quite into it. Not saying that I'm not interested in those things. It's just that can I chalk this up to being a parent again? Like, no, I didn't.
But you run, and do you run with any regularity? Do you practice or exercise with any regularity? Because that's something that helps a lot too.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I was on the treadmill today. Gym is very close. Weather was horrible today in Richmond, so it's like I do like running outside in au naturel. Like, no, whoops, that makes it sound like I'm running naked. No, running out in nature.
In the cold, when snowing, just go naked, and it's very refreshing. You know, reactivates all your veins.
Everything's great, super slick too. I try to.
I do here all the time. Every time that snows here in Rio,
oh, you do? Oh,
I just go run naked.
Oh yeah. No, you're blue. No,
because it never snows here. So
Oh, right.
It's Rio.
That's crazy. I try to go anywhere between 3 to 5 times a week. to like to keep up with, to keep up with that. Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's also like, it, like health wise as well. It's like, it's you, I think at middle age came on fast for me. So, it's, I definitely like, I don't smoke anymore. Like I used to smoke a lot. Like I haven't had a cigarette now in like 13 years or something like that. I don't drink nearly as much either. I do enjoy an occasional drink here and there, but it's, yeah, it's just all these things that you're just sort of have to take a little bit better care of yourself as you get older, physically and mentally. So it's like, these things are, these things just become, I mean, super important if, and if obviously not only for myself, but just for like the family as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody, I would say.
Mm-hmm,
sure. You mentioned meditation, and, and one thing I ask people here too is about maybe weird experiences they might have had. So I ask if they ever had, you know, any experience with altered states of awareness, even through deep states of meditation, trances, hypnosis, or no, even the use of psychedelics, and if they had, and how did the experience affect them, or if they were managed to learn anything from it, or grow from it in any way, or if not, how did it affect them in any way? Did you ever had any of these experiences yourself?
No, I've never had a, sorry, listeners, I've never had an acid trip, so
so I you don't have to be sorry for that.
But one, it's interesting you ask that, because in certain, like, it doesn't happen all the time, but if I'm definitely in the right state of mind with doing certain meditations, and if it's guided meditation, like I do use an app, and for one of these guided meditations, it's the visualization of sort of like a warm clear liquid like filling you from the top of your head, and it starts to fill up from the bottom of your feet going all the way up your body. If I'm in that right mindset, if I'm really, really focusing on that filling up, like body is a vessel, essentially, I can absolutely, or what my senses are telling me, I'm feeling that warmth, and I'm feeling like, and it's like, and which is, I think to a certain extent, like a little bit going back to The Exorcist, a little bit scary. It feels like a little bit otherworldly as well too. So it's like a little bit like, but I think it's also, it's also just understanding, like, you know, the guided meditation app is also really good in terms of like saying like, this is a normal process as well too. Yeah. And like, this is to feel that. So yeah, that would be the closest. Yeah. Unfortunately. Yeah. I haven't had any weird, like out of body experiences or anything like that. But again, like the podcast that I'm listening to right now, like, these are fascinating, where people are having these near death experiences, and they're talking about the light at the end of the tunnel and like seeing these loved ones. It's like, I'm always fascinated by that as well too. Like whether it's real or not, it's regardless. It's just, it's great to hear that.
The person who had that experience, and that's
absolutely,
that's the point.
Yeah, absolutely.
And have you ever had any kind of supernatural experiences? Like, have you ever seen a ghost or felt one, or seen an alien or UFO or anything like this?
No. I'm so boring. I've never seen that. I mean, I could tell you a funny Exorcist story, but this would involve my dad. So my father, when The Exorcist came out in the 70s, he saw it at the drive-in with his cousin, and they were absolutely bombed. Like they were pretty drunk, and when Reagan like gets fully possessed, they started yelling and throwing beer bottles at the screen, saying, "Get the fuck out of her body, devil!" Like they were so upset at it. They're also really drunk. Yeah. What was going on? So they were being like their own sort of like a drunk exorcist. But I've never really, maybe that's also why that I'm writing so much about horror and the supernatural. I don't know if I want any of those things to necessarily have. I don't want those things to happen to me. but it's always sort of fascinating, like to see. To hear these stories, watch the movies, and to have all that, so it feeds into the lore for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, but you also talked about conspiracies too. So even though not the supernatural, what would you be, you know, your favorite conspiracy, and that fascinates you more? Not necessarily that you want to be true, but something that maybe fascinates you and you like to dig into that stuff.
Oh, geez. We may have to come back to that. I have to think about that. Wait a minute. What?
We can go back to that.
Sure. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. No, it's all good. Like you said to, you know, do you dreams? Do you remember, you know, the dreams you have?
Sometimes I do. Like, I've never done a dream journal. I've never done anything like that. Like, some of the dreams, sometimes I remember some of the dreams. Like, it's really, like, I know when, like, I've been having more anxiety dreams because of the Kickstarter coming up. Speaking of being au naturel, like, being naked somewhere.
I used it to have those naked at school dreams.
Classic. Oh, absolutely classic. Like, I feel like sometimes the dreams that I remember, and I'm sure this is common with a lot of people, is that you just remember, like, right between that sort of twilight of waking up and like you're still sort of a little bit asleep, but something is still like just out of the periphery, and you're sort of thinking about, like, well, is that real? Is that not real? And like that is usually like that gray area, and it's almost ineffable. Like, you can't really necessarily, like, I'm trying my best to articulate it, but it's like, I think that it's to a big part of it. You just can't. It's more of the feeling that you're coming out of sleep, but you're not quite out of sleep yet.
But yes,
as far as dreaming right now, pure anxiety dreams. Joke of pure anxiety dreams.
Can you share us one of the latest? What was that?
Naked on a Zoom call. I mean, the go-to is being vulnerable, right? So being or like one other one, just being chastised by other, like, not even anyone that I would know. Like, it would just be random people, like, walking down the street. So it's like they really sort of they've been, I don't want to say super listeners, I'm fine, like, I'm doing okay, but it's they've been a little bit more frequent now.
You mentioned about this state between being awake and, you know, dreaming. And I remember the stories about artists that, you know, use this artifice to get into this dream-like state to work. Like Salvador Dali would sleep with a spoon on his mouth to, you know, try to take a nap. And when it fall down and he wake up, kind of this dream state and go back. And some people try to do this. I never tried it, but I'm always super curious to try that.
I think dream journaling, like, my wife has a dream journaling book. It's like one of the first books
I'm making a book journaling game for people who can't remember their dreams, because that's me. I can't remember my dreams. I'm making a journaling game that you fill yourself with your memories and experiences based on kinds of, you know, prompts, and then you roll and you go generate your dreams and twists. And it can get weirder, and there is rules for, like, lucid dreaming, so you can modify stuff. Yeah,
it's awesome. No, that's very cool. Yeah, no, the what I was going to say about the dream journaling is because my wife was doing dream journaling a long time ago. And she did say that actually her journaling her dreams made her dream less, like, for her. So it was sort of interesting. Like, it had like sort of a counterintuitive effect on it. And maybe because, I mean, we're speculating here, where maybe it's because she was analytical. But yeah, no, I sort of always found that fascinating. But that sounds awesome.
The knowledge of dreams is very speculative, Sue. It's very, there's a lot we don't know yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's something I'm playing with in the game. Yeah.
Awesome. Oh, I can't wait. Yeah. I can't wait. Yeah. Cool.
And Anthony, we're getting to the end of the show, so now it's mm-hmm. more whimsical questions, more playful, just to know about personality and stuff. So if you could have any superpower, what superpower would you have and why? What would be like the first thing you would do with that?
Oh, geez. It always comes back to the X-Men. I want to be Shadow Cat. I want to phase in and out of walls. And Kitty Pryde's costume was awesome.
That was my wife's nickname on the internet.
Shadow what? Cat. Oh, cool. Very cool. Yeah. See there, fooled
because
you guys.
Of the character too. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so awesome. Fooled you guys. Not doing Wolverine. Straight up Shadow Cat. Let me be Shadow Cat.
Yeah. And what would be the first thing you would do with the powers?
Oh geez. Now you are putting me on the spot. The first thing I would do with the power, I'm gonna keep this super wholesome. I would absolutely, and I'm being totally honest here. I think I would have to go to like my favorite Indian restaurant and just like sneak in and eat their amazing food. Like, I love chicken vindaloo so much. If they had like a lot of chicken vindaloo, I would sneak in and take it. I'd leave money, but before they would be open, because this place is never open like when I want it to be open. They have like weird hours. So I'd be the good thief. I would put the money down. So sneak in and get like a massive.
Is that like your favorite dish, chicken vindaloo, or what would it be?
It's up there. It absolutely is up there. I mean, my wife is Chinese American, and I've over the years have just been introduced to such amazing cuisine, Cantonese cuisine. So, I mean, it's up there, right? With, I love cha siu bows, like pork buns, please. But yeah, I would all food, like yoga. I would say, like, I don't know, like,
I
well,
love
what's
food
a,
too.
Yeah, what is what what's I've never had like a traditional Brazilian meal. What would if I came down? What would you make me? What would you make me?
Feijoada.
What is
which
that?
Is like...
What is that?
Which is like a big bowl of, you know, boiled beans, but we have all sorts of meats inside and sausages with rice and farofa, which is kind of fried, powdered tapioca with,
oh my God,
you know, bacon and sausage and grilled, I don't know, it's kind of lettuce, but grilled and with slice of orange and a lot of pepper. It's very good.
Oh my! Okay, I'm looking up tickets now. I'm coming down, like, yes, that sounds amazing. So yes.
Yeah, and we have here what we called comida de boteco, which is like food from cheap bars. The bars you go to drink beer, and it's very like small fried stuff. And it's like for snacks, you know.
Oh yeah.
And it's very popular. We do all kinds of stuff here.
Oh my god.
Very
I'm coming.
Good.
Oh yes. Yeah, I'm coming. When's the best time? When's it?
It's always warm here.
It's always what I was gonna say. It's always warm.
Yeah. Well, so, it's not too hot. Would be from, you know, from maybe May until October.
Okay.
It's not so oppressive. Here in Rio.
Do you hear this, Jay Domingo? We're going. We're getting.
Yeah.
So that's
it's gonna
awesome.
Be amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
and barbecue, Brazilian barbecue is big too, right?
Oh yeah. No, now you're making me hungry. Yeah. So yeah, good Me for too. You. Yeah.
Another question is, if you could live in any fictional world, from comics, from movies, from books, from games, from whatever, where would you live, and who would you be in that universe, in that setting?
Oh, jeez. I gotta go back to the X-Men again, but very specific, very specific. Has to be early 80s with Punk Storm. So like when they were when it was like the mutant massacre, and they were like living in the sewers and on the run. There's something as a preteen teenager just reading those outsider stories of the X-Men that I wanted to be an outlaw like that too. So who would I be in that? Who would I be? I don't want to be Wolverine.
You can be you can create an alter ego for yourself. Anthony Miloro being that
oh
role.
No. Oh no, who would I be? Oh geez. Oh man. Oh, this may be a little bit too much into my psyche. I don't know. I would be a friend of like Shadow Cat. Oh, how about this? I'd be Shadow Cat's boyfriend. How about that? I'd be that.
Yeah.
There you go.
Awesome. And the other question is, if you could take anything from these fictional worlds, these fictional universes, and made that thing real in our world, what would you choose to make it real, and why? And that can be, you know, a location, a faction, a character, a source of energy, anything.
Like
mutations, you could make.
Yeah,
mutations
real.
I don't know.
Mean, that would be cool, but it would be. What would I want to make real? Let's have it. Let's see, like, what would it, why not? Let's see, like, but it wouldn't be like where I think the Marvel movies are, or, well, I don't know. There hasn't been an X-Men. No, there's been tons of X-Men movies recently. Or hasn't there? I don't keep up with the Marvel movies that much, but
well,
it's
the cinematic universe that hasn't been mutants.
Yeah. Not so much, but yeah, I would want to see that gritty 80s mutant universe sort of come into play, where it's like, yeah, where the X-Men were like still the outsider heroes, but like specifically, again, God, I'm getting really niche here, Giogo. It's like they're on the run. They're forced into the sewers. They're hiding out with the Morlocks. Some of them are being stripped of their power. Storm at this point, if we remember, Storm is, she has no powers yet. Her powers were stripped. So she was like, and the leader of the X-Men too. So, that would be really fun to see that, but also extremely scary as well too. So yeah.
And finally, Anthony, the last question is, do you remember the last time you felt really happy and, you know, just grateful for being here and being alive? And if you do, can you share when was that and what is that you were doing?
That's the easiest question. It's right here, baby. It's talking to you. These conversations, and I truly mean this, like these conversations with creators and the community that we've been making, this is that special time. So this is like, yeah, I'm happy and I'm content. Oh, wait, are you saying you're not happy? Are you not?
I am. I'm awesome. I love this. I always say this here that I started wanting to do one episode a week, but I enjoy it so much. I do two episodes a week, sometimes more, and I thought it would take away from my writing, my creative process, but it's the contrary. It fuels me. It motivates me, and it's great. And it's cool. As you said, it is like therapy. I come here and I talk to like-minded people about art, about creativity, about parenthood, about being a parent. I've talked about here about relationship advice. and then, you know, all sort of stuff.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
great.
That's awesome.
We have a section like game designers give relationship advice. So
Oh god. That's fascinating. Actually, this is important, and this is happiness, yeah. And this is what it is. It's like to say like another part that I was to be truly happy. I mean, I would answer that by saying, maybe 2 hours ago when I was eating this amazing roasted vegetable meal my wife made. So I was super happy then. So moment by moment, yeah. I try to like it's the happiness is there. I know it's sometimes tough to see it, but it is absolutely there. For sure.
Do you have any kind of practice for gratitude? Do you try to remember every day to internalize something?
Yeah, I mean it's reflection, I think, is a big part of it, and it's definitely difficult. Like every day you're not able to do that, but it is important, I think, to try to keep up that practice, to sort of think at the end of the day, like, you know, like what happened today, like what worked, what didn't work, what where can I be a little bit of a better person, a better father, a better husband, a better writer, a better, you know, coworker, just like, how can I do that? And it's, again, it's always tough.
And to celebrate the good stuff too, right? Like, like the good roasted vegetable you ate, or smile, or joke, or... Yeah.
All that. Yes. It's not all like, again, not all self-critical. It's like, absolutely. Yeah. Like, Or just to think like,
especially us that we're all very self-critical. It's very important to remember the good stuff. People say it takes nine times as much time to remember the good stuff than the bad stuff.
Agree. 100%. Yeah. For sure. Cool.
And Anthony, that's all the questions I have. I'm very grateful for having you here. And do you have any, you know, maybe last message for the wonderful weirdos that might be listening to us?
Yes, absolutely. And thank you so much for having me on. This has been an absolute pleasure, Giogo. Keep it weird, everyone. Keep doing your own thing. It's like you're doing great out there. And if somebody's being super critical about that, like, I know it's tough, try to pay it no mind, you know. It's like, you know, critiquing yourself, like having that community to talk to and bounce ideas off of course that's necessary and needed. But if other people are, you know, are unfortunately in your life and being super negative and are saying like, you know, why are you doing this, etc. no, try to push through that, because like, keep it weird, man, for sure. Keep doing it.
Yeah, and sometimes a lot more about those critics are more saying a lot more about themselves than about you.
Absolutely.
Right? And
absolutely.
Yeah, and yeah.
Yeah,
well,
cool.
Anthony, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Can you take us out saying the catchphrase of the show? Keep it weird, everybody.
Keep it weird, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Weird Games and Weirder People. If you'd like to keep up with the show, please subscribe to be notified when we release new episodes. If you'd like to support us, please leave a review or head on to ko-fi.com/WGNWP. See you next time, and remember, weird is the new wonderful.